Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on this week's show, we rank which broadcasters are most likely to acquire the next round of rights to the Champions League. We share the inside scoop of what UEFA is saying about Turner Sports, according to sources. We take a look at the MLS viewing numbers from the playoffs, and we look ahead to a potential new TV deal for NWSL. Plus, of course, letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, let's start off with the Major League Soccer playoffs. It's the time of the season. I mean, all these clubs have been trying to fight away all season long to get into the playoffs, and here we are. From this past weekend, what's your take on whether the playoff structure as it is, because it has changed quite a bit, whether it's working with these one-off games or not?
So I thought it was working after the weekend, because what you saw were basically higher seeds advance. You saw some really entertaining end-to-end action. I should admit that due to my own job and work constraints, I haven't watched a match since the Philly-New York game on Sunday night. But I had watched everything to that point. So I saw enough of the playoffs. I watched the Minnesota LA Galaxy game. That was that night also. But I watched everything on Saturday and Sunday, and I thought, obviously, with the exception of that Minnesota game, that the higher seeds generally were able to take advantage of their opportunities. You had some really entertaining close matches. The DC Toronto game was entertaining. The Philly New York game was entertaining. Was really happy to see Fafa Picault, who I know personally, who I've worked with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, get a goal, a critical goal in that match, and Ali Bedoya, who's also here from South Florida, advance. So that was those were entertaining matches. I won't say it was the best football. I think that there were a lot of defensive errors. There were a lot of goalkeeping errors also. That was kind of significant over the weekend. But to me, it was great that you saw teams rewarded for having better regular seasons instead of kind of the crapshoots we used to see. Although, the truth be told, the first round, the higher seed was always one leg, and the higher seed got the home match. Now, what's happened the last few nights, and we're recording this on Thursday, for those of you who might be listening later, has cast some has been a little bit of a disturbing trend for me. Not to take away from Seattle's performance against Salt Lake, and again, I didn't see that match. I've just seen highlights. And same thing for New York's loss, New York City FC's loss at Yankee Stadium. But now we're again seeing the lower seeds that have a match to play in, right? Advancing, which is something we saw in the previous format. Now, what would happen in the previous format is that the first leg would be hosted by the team with the lower seed. They would ultimately win the match 2-0 or whatever, and then the higher seed in the second leg would be chasing the tie with the lower seed sitting with 8 or 9 men behind the ball playing in a low block and ultimately getting through two legs. Jesse Marsh, who I think everybody now is finally recognizing as probably the best American coach other than maybe his mentor, Bob Bradley, joked because the Red Bulls had been the number one seed repeatedly in the East and would end up getting knocked out in this format. Maybe we should just finish sixth every year and then we would have a better shot at getting to MLS Cup. So I was positive about it. I even tweeted after Sunday, boy, I was right about this format being better and making things more competitive, more entertaining in the playoffs. Yes, I once again admit I have not watched the midweek matches because I've had professional obligations that have prevented me from doing so. However, the results concern me, and maybe this format, we have to see how this thing plays out to the MLS Cup, but maybe this format isn't that much different, and it's a crapshoot, the playoffs, and there's really no emphasis or no value on winning more points in the regular season.
And that's the thing that so far is that it's been pretty predictable in terms of the teams advancing. So there's been a lot of talk over social media, especially from this past weekend, about how exciting the MLS playoffs were. I didn't catch a lot of it. I actually think Saturday and Sunday my daughter had travel soccer games, so I was driving around Florida taken into those. So I watched the highlights of the MLS games, and there was a lot of goalkeeping errors, yes, that you mentioned, but everything went according to plan. I mean, beforehand, if you said, okay, which teams are going to advance to the next stage, pretty much all those teams advanced. Now that we were actually recording this one Thursday night before the LAFC LA Galaxy game, maybe that's the one. Maybe that's the shining example. I think everyone's looking forward to that one of it being a really exciting, thrilling game where, you know, I don't know, 3-3, 4-4, whatever it may be. But so far the games have been pretty predictable. Pretty, I wouldn't say boring, but not as exciting as you would think, as I would think for playoffs or championship, these types of games where, I mean, everything's on the line. It just seems to be very straightforward and a little bit boring for me personally. Now, Kartik, in terms of this past week, so in terms of soccer, one of the interesting developments I do want to mention is in regards to the UEFA Champions League. And again, too, following up on last week's show, I've been watching most of the Champions League and Europa League through Zona Football, which is through Univision, which is still amazing stuff. But one of the interesting developments, I heard this a few weeks ago, and I heard it again this week too, is these are Spanish language broadcasts of these games, but the amount of English that is being spoken by these commentators. So for the most part, I don't understand a lot of Spanish. I understand it a little bit, having lived in Florida. But just some of the words that were thrown out this week by some of the commentators on the Spanish language broadcast of the Champions League. I heard, oh, no, no, that's not a goal. I heard goal check. I heard no goal. I heard talking about Liverpool, talking about the Reds. And I think part of it, too, is that because the games are, I mean, the UEFA broadcast, they're taking the feed from UEFA. So the on-screen graphics are in English. So when VAR happens, the actual VAR graphics on the screen, it'll say goal check. Or it'll come back and say, okay, no goal. So the commentator is essentially repeating what those things say, but not in Spanish, in English. That I think is interesting, especially on the development too that we talked about last week, where Telemundo's starting to release video series, kind of basically vlogs in English for their audience, the bilingual audience. And of course, the Champions League and Europa League are European competitions where, I mean, it's all sorts of different languages used, but the most common one is English. And to me, that's an interesting development. I have to watch and listen a little bit more carefully to see if that continues that way. But still, I thought that was interesting to share. In terms of some of the other soccer I've watched this past week, one of the questions came up from one of our listeners, and this is from Robert Thompson. And Robert says, which broadcast games were more exciting this past weekend, Major League Soccer or the Premier League? And from the Premier League that I saw, which wasn't a lot from this past weekend, I mean, Man United against Liverpool, I watched that match, which I thought was pretty ordinary. I did not see a lot of, Liverpool were definitely not at the same level that they're used to. Manchester United, getting a fortunate goal from that. It was a clear foul. That should not have been allowed if VAR was used correctly.
But this is something I hate to bring this up, Chris, but I left that match, and I think I tweeted something about it and then just turned Twitter off and I didn't think I tweeted again until the end of the Philly-New York game, which was 6 hours later, 7 hours later, that I just really felt like I'm getting more confused by VAR and the subjectivity because of that goal, right? The clear foul in the buildup, which was on the other half of the pitch, I should mention, and then you go forward and you get the goal for United. And then the handball – there was a handball that was called, and then there was a handball that was not called. Mm-hmm. Am I remembering this correctly? Yes. So each of those calls added a layer of subjectivity that we didn't have before VAR. So what we've always been told is there's a lot of subjectivity and snap decisions by officials. VAR will correct that. It will always make the right call. But what I saw in the Liverpool-Manchester United match was three decisive calls in a match, which were honestly all subjected to a second pair of subjective eyes. That's my take on it. So I actually left that match with a very poor taste in my mouth.
Yeah, and that was something too, like catching up on the soccer I missed from the weekend and watching ESPN FC on Sunday night on ESPN Plus. Craig Burley and Steve Nicol must have spent about a good 15 minutes talking about the Manchester United goal and debating VAR, which is a good topic to talk about. There's a lot of time dedicated to that. But yeah, so far in terms of the Premier League especially, I've been disappointed with VAR, where... I don't know. There's so many things wrong with VAR. I don't know what the path is for the future. I mean, what it has to happen is the rules have to change. The rules of the game itself are not in alignment with how VAR has been used. I mean, even going to the Ajax-Chelsea game midweek in the Champions League, and whether that was a goal by Ajax or whether that goal should have stood or not, whether the player was offside or onside, and... if you check out the Twitter feed at World Soccer Talk, there's an interesting video there that beIN Sports had from Doha, where they analysed the call that was made, where it shows that the Ajax player was offside. However, at that moment that the VAR officials for the Champions League saw that player was offside, it was after the ball had already beIN passed. By about a frame, so a split second later. So not on the point of contact when the pass is made, because on the point of contact where the pass is made, that player was onside. So it's such down to such small degrees of margin of error that the rules have to change. There has to be, whether it's a separation or whatever it may be in terms of offside especially, but and that's just the offside. I mean, going back to what you said too about missed calls or referees deciding not to go ahead and use VAR when VAR is available for things like that. And again too, with each league and competition using VAR differently, you really, it almost needs to be a new position that's added, that's a master of VAR, somebody who can come in and say, okay, looking at all the different VARs from around the world, here's my recommendation in terms of which one is actually the best one, because the Premier League, I think, is not, I mean, nowhere near the best one beIN used.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is MLS has gotten this right from the get-go, as right as VAR can be, I guess. I mean, I still believe you're looking at another subjective pair of eyes with VAR. But right. Howard Webb was the guy who implemented, and obviously he's the head of officials now in Major League Soccer, but or in U.S. soccer in general, so overseeing USL officials and NISA officials as well. He implemented this in several stages and got it to a point where VAR is kind of and maybe they're not overturning as many calls or getting as much quote unquote right, but there's a more of a seamless factor in MLS matches about over VAR. There are some obvious exceptions to this, but it seems to be more seamless and less intrusive than it is in the Premier League. I think the Bundesliga has done a good job as well, but there have been some recent incidents where I've just scratched my head after the VAR center in Cologne comes up with a decision on a goal in the Bundesliga and thought, that's ridiculous. They actually blew that completely.
My favorite game of this past week was Salzburg against Napoli in the Champions League. Just incredible. Again, another one of these back and forth games. I mean, goals scored both ends. I mean, just when you think that Salzburg is going to go ahead and win this game, Napoli comes back, and eventually actually Napoli wins this game. Jesse Marsh doing a fantastic job in terms of making his players believe in themselves, in terms of pushing forward and going for it. And it's another game too that, the Salzburg-Liverpool game was a game that it looked like Salzburg was going to perhaps win that one, but they didn't get that result in that game either. But a lot of positive things we can say about Salzburg. One more thing, and that's from the playoffs from this week, was watching NYC FC against Toronto on Wednesday night, and I often hear a lot of complaints from soccer fans in terms of Major League Soccer and how the games are produced on Fox. And I don't watch a lot of the MLS games on Fox. I think there's a lot of other people like that. But the feedback I always get is that how poorly produced the Fox production is. And from watching this game, I could see that too in terms of camera operators, where or the producers, where they'd show a replay of a harmless foul and then go back, and then a split second later, a goal is almost scored, where you miss the build-up to that goal. And that was something that was... I saw that quite a few times in that game. The other thing, too, is that for the most of this match, because it was played at Citi Field and not Yankee Stadium, there was a foul ball net across about half of the screen. So you're watching this game through a net. And it was, again, and that's the thing about the actual game itself was pretty good. It was a decent game. Skill level was decent. Nothing bad. The quality was decent. But a lot of the times it's the production, it's the way that Major League Soccer is presented that always makes me feel that it's more amateurish. And that's the thing, too, about the Premier League. The Premier League is not by any means the best league in the world, but the way it's produced is, in terms of the number of camera angles, in terms of the number of cameras used, in terms of the close-up action, the atmosphere, and just how professionally it's edited. Which, when you're watching a game, you may not even realize that in terms of how great of a job they do that. But if you watch something like that, I don't know, Sheffield United against Liverpool game, or whichever Premier League game it is, and then watch a Major League Soccer broadcast, if it's on Fox or another broadcaster, Fox especially, though, you'll see a dramatic difference in terms of the number of operators, of the cameras, just really, it's not a fluid, exciting, enjoyable experience. So, Kartik, you missed that, but lucky for you on that.
Yeah, lucky for me on that, I suppose. My favorite game of the week, by the way, was a game in the NWSL, which was the North Carolina Courage in extra time defeating the Rain. Seattle, they're not Seattle Rain anymore, they're playing Tacoma. The Rain FC, 4-1, three extra time goals in this match after there had been two dramatic the match was 0-0 in the 86th or 87th minute. Then there was a penalty. Heather O'Reilly converted it for North Carolina, but then the Rain got a goal right toward the end of stoppage time. Then Dabinia and Crystal Dunn and somebody else also scored for North Carolina. So that was actually a fun game. And NWSL's playoffs have been doing okay TV ratings-wise. I mean, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, actually, let's get to that now while we're talking about it. And that's so the game that you watched, which is North Carolina Courage against Rain FC on Sunday on ESPN2. In the semi-final, that one had 102,000 people watching that game as an average, which is a fantastic number. I mean, it's better than a lot of Major League Soccer games on ESPN2. And then the other game, the other semi-final, which was Chicago Red Stars against Portland, and that one had 155,000 viewers on ESPN2, which is the game that followed the Courage game. Both of those are fantastic numbers for NWSL. And speaking of NWSL and women's soccer, Kartik, let me hand it over to you for the first item in the TV streaming news.
Yeah. The FIFA Women's World Cup in 2019 was watched by over 1 billion people. In related news, Octagon and the NWSL, and this is a... this is very interesting because it takes things in a little bit different direction than some of us thought things were going with NWSL. This week announced a multi-tier consulting partnership in which Octagon's divisions will advise NWSL on its league media rights, sponsorship, and marketing. In addition, Octagon's marketing division will assist the league with brand marketing, asset development, sponsorship valuation, and fan engagement insights to help generate increases in overall reach for revenue for all the leagues and the league and its team. There's some expansion going on in NWSL. We heard about Louisville this week. There may be another team or two, although it has to be said there's some teams really struggling in the league. But, Chris, I think this is significant because there was an assumption that NWSL was moving towards towards some. And there is also some discussion about what is NWSL going to do with its management contract and operations management contract beyond the conclusion of this season. Obviously, this season's going to conclude in a week here, within the week. So there is a lot of talk about the league going in a completely was going in a completely U.S. soccer-centric, MLS-centric direction that has now suddenly changed in the last couple of days. And people are thinking, okay, they now are leveraging the marketability of women's soccer, women's football, after the World Cup was watched by more than a billion people and broke all sorts of records here in the United States, or didn't break all sorts of records, but did move the needle significantly. Records were broken in the last World Cup. That might be a time zone thing. But the point being, Chris, there has been a lot of talk in the last couple of days that maybe this league now has the ability to stand on its own two feet without U.S. soccer, without the help of Major League Soccer, and can be its own independent entity. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do on the operations side in the next few months. They have to make a decision about that.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, but it is a step forward in the right direction. I mean, so Octagon is going to advise the NWSL, as you said, on league media rights, sponsorship and marketing, which are some big revenue generators. But for the league, NWSL, even right now, those are not probably things that generate a lot of revenue. This should do in terms of so in terms of whether it's ESPN or an NBC that comes along that signs a deal with NWSL to broadcast more of those games. I'm thinking it's probably ESPN on the ESPN Plus is probably most likely, but this would be a great way to partner with them. Now, according to an industry source, Kartik, moving on, UEFA is not satisfied with Turner Sports' coverage of the Champions League. Now, this is something that, according to one of my sources, this doesn't mean that the entire UEFA organization is dissatisfied, but one UEFA executive is definitely not satisfied with Turner Sports' coverage, which begs the question, is what does this mean for the current bidding process that's happening for the rights for the 2021 to 2024 of the Champions League? So we obviously that Turner Sports and Univision have the rights right now. They have it for one more year. But after that, will they still be the broadcasters? Now, according to a different source of mine, UEFA contacted Fox Sports last year to ask them if they were interested in getting the UEFA Champions League back. And Fox said no. So if that source is correct, that's another example, I believe, of how Fox has basically said, okay, we're out of the club soccer game other than Major League Soccer, and we're continuing to focus our efforts on the Women's World Cup and the World Cup, which is the big revenue generating, you mean, in terms of, and also in terms of viewership. But according to the source, if Fox had the opportunity to say, I mean, if UEFA said it to Fox, hey, I mean, Turner's doing okay, but we really liked what you guys did, Fox, with having more coverage on television across all of your Fox channels and also having it available more easily through your streaming products rather than through BR Live. Fox, would you be interested in doing kind of a deal with us now? And this would have been a year ago. So when the rights are up for bidding, we don't go to a bid. We just say, okay, Fox is now the new rights holder. So one thing to look at this, though, Kartik, is that TNT's coverage of the UEFA Champions League so far has gotten a lot of bad press, which is a lot of flack from a lot of listeners and soccer fans in the United States. But actually, the group stage coverage of the Champions League so far is averaging 212,000 viewers, which is the best in more than a decade through match day 3. So even though Fox, a lot of people talked about Fox and how great they were doing, the actual average for the games is higher on TNT, albeit TNT is not broadcasting as many matches. And then the second stat to throw out there too, Kartik, is that TNT's overall second season of the UEFA Champions League coverage this season has delivered strong results with viewership 5% greater than last year. So they're actually doing better than they were last year. But at the same time, again, UEFA's not happy. Fox supposedly was offered a chance to go ahead and get the rights. They declined. And now we're at a place now, Kartik, where, in your opinion, if you had to rank them, who would you say is most likely to acquire the next round of Champions League rights in the United States?
Well, first off, this is the highest ratings have been since ESPN last had the rights. So that entire 10 years of Fox, is it 10 years? 9 years? 10 years? The ratings were lower than they are currently on TNT. So that's something UEFA has to factor in their analysis. I know there's less exposure in terms of English language television for Champions League. There's never been so much Champions League available on Spanish language television.
Right.
But I think it's probably ESPN, but that'll be through BAMTech and ESPN Plus. Maybe you just get the same amount of games on television as you're getting now, if ESPN wins the rights. But you will get probably less clunky coverage, and we will see what happens in terms of NBC. I don't know that NBC is interested in anything beyond this, mm-hmm. so I think it's going to be a battle, a straight down battle between Turner. Beyond when I say this, Premier League, straight battle between Turner and ESPN.
What about a number three? Do you have a number three, kind of a somebody catching up in the pack and a surprise package, perhaps?
Could IMG or Discovery Networks bid and get the rights and then flip them to some? Well, if it's Discovery, they'll show them on Discovery channels. If it's mm-hmm. IMG, would they then flip it to somebody else? That's, I don't know that UEFA wants to do that in this market, but that's, I can't see anyone else really bidding on it. I mean, maybe NBC does bid and they do a lowball bid, but I think it'll be those two. And as if Univision continues to keep and 2DNA continues to keep those rights to the Spanish language side, you're going to see more and more bleed to Spanish language over time.
Yeah, it's interesting too, Carter, because you and I did not share our rankings beforehand, so we're doing this on the fly here. My ranking number one is ESPN Plus. Also, I think it's a slam dunk for them. I think they have an enormous amount of money available to buy rights, and they've already gone on the record to say that the Champions League and Europa League would complement their coverage of Serie A and the Bundesliga, which it would. It would be, I mean, other than the Premier League, I mean, that they would have basically everything from the European soccer perspective, as well as having Euro 2020 and European qualifiers. It would give you everything. But having said that, Kartik, I would say that I wouldn't count NBC out. I know that the last round of rights for the Champions League, one of the things that they were concerned with was... I mean, when you're watching the Champions League and you see those ads, which are sometimes very annoying ads, but either Pepsi Cola or Heineken, or it's the same ads every single time. Well, those are ads that the UEFA runs worldwide, and the broadcasters, I don't think make any money from that, but they have to run those ads before the halftime break and right after. So that's lost revenue opportunities there, where they could be having their own advertisers in those spots. So first of all, it's a very expensive rights acquisition to buy. Second of all, it's a lot harder to generate as much revenue because of the way that the UEFA has structured the advertising blocks for soccer, which are already at a minimum anyway. But I'm starting to think that NBC Sports could be interested in this a little bit more, but more so on the Spanish side. So they could go in and say, okay, we've got NBC Sports and we've got Telemundo Deportes, and we're going in there with a joint deal, or one deal essentially, and you can have the great coverage of the Champions League, which will be complemented by the coverage of the Premier League. But at the same time, on the Spanish language side, we've got enormous reach, and we can have these games available, through nationwide. The thing about this, though, Kartik, is that my number three, my kind of from the bottom of the pack, coming up fast, is DAZN. And
oh yeah.
I mean, they have the money.
That'll probably be my number three now that I think about it, yes.
And I think they have the Champions League rights in Canada already, so that's an opportunity for them to put themselves on the map instantly by doing that. And they've missed out on all the other rights packages that have become available just because, I mean, they've been slow to launch in the United States. But the big one about this one is Univision, because I would think that UEFA is very satisfied with Univision in terms of the reach, in terms of the level of commitment that they're giving to the Europa League and the Champions League, the amount of coverage that these games are getting on. I mean, a lot of these are over the air channels or the big channels. I mean, they're all in 100%. So I think ESPN would love to have an ESPN / ESPN Deportes deal, but I can see ESPN Plus getting it, and then Univision for the Spanish language side, and then hopefully ESPN is happy with that, and we'll have, you know, like you said too, maybe a couple of games a week on television, and the vast majority of everything else on streaming. Let's move on to TV ratings. We won't go into these in a lot of depth, but you can get all of the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage. We'll have them up there in the next 24 hours. We have to talk about the Major League Soccer playoffs. That was the first topic we came at where we started this podcast, and that was the new format of these single elimination games. And in theory, I mean, these games were more exciting. These games are more exciting because they're one game instead of two legs. But the reality is, unfortunately, is in terms of the way that these games were scheduled this year compared to last year. So last year, the games that they had, they'd have a game on ESPN2, and at the same time, the Spanish language broadcast would be on Unimas, or it'd be on FS1 and then the Spanish language on Unimas. So each game, you could go ahead and combine the English language and Spanish language numbers together to get some pretty impressive numbers. You'd have 450,000 people watching one of the games, and maybe, I don't know, 500 for another one. But this year, what they decided to do, for whatever reason, is to go ahead and not do it that way. So, for example, one of the games was NYC FC against... I think it was actually the weekend game, and that one was on. Red Bulls. Okay, well, I can't remember which game it was specifically, but there was a game that was on this past weekend that was only on Spanish language television, that was only on TUDN, and then there was another game that was only on ESPN News. Which was one of the late games. I think the Real Salt Lake game against Portland.
Yeah.
Was on ESPN News. Right. And then you had, so in terms of the way that the games are scheduled and which broadcasters got them, you didn't have the advantage of last season where you'd have an English language and a Spanish language broadcaster broadcasting that same game to a much larger audience. You'd have it only available on, say, TUDN. Which is, nothing wrong with that, or only available on ESPN News. So as a result, out of the six games featured on US television this past weekend, the MLS playoffs averaged 177,500 viewers at a time where last year, at the same time, average viewership for that initial knockout round was almost 400,000. So from 2019, basically what happened was the viewing audience fell by like more than 54%. So while the games are exciting, I don't know, and why Major League Soccer did it this way, I have no idea. In terms of maybe they felt that they owed TUDN some extra focus with, they could have their own game.
Well, there were games a few years ago. There were a set of first round matches when they did 3 vs. 6 and 4 vs. 5 that were just on Univision Deportes. I'm trying to remember what year that was. It might have been the last contract. It might have been 2014. But there was a year that happened, and I remember being quite stunned about it. So yeah, they've done this before, but I just don't think they have since they had this new contract.
And I guess the other thing too is that we got a lot of feedback from a lot of our listeners is that a lot of Major League Soccer fans or fans of Major League Soccer clubs were confused about where these games were going to be on. Because, I mean, if it's a Premier League, you know that it's going to be on either NBCSN or it's going to be on NBC. And rarely it'll be on CNBC, but pretty much you switch on NBCSN or NBC and you'll find the Premier League game. Now, for this past weekend with the playoffs, games could have been on FS1. They could have been on Big Fox, which they weren't, but they could be on Univision Deportes, they could be on Unimas, they could be on TUDN, they could be on ESPN, but then they could be on ESPN2. And that's the thing, that the two is that a lot of viewers and a lot of soccer fans seem to be very confused about where these games were going to be on. And that's one advantage of having one broadcaster, like an NBC, that shows the Premier League, and you know where those games are going to be on. It's almost like clockwork, what time those games kick off, as opposed to Major League Soccer, where you really need a guide. You need a guide to kind of guide you through, okay, this game is going to be on this time, at this time. You mean, some of these games are on ESPN News, which not a lot of people get anyway. So, what a mess. But hopefully the numbers will pick up in the remaining stages of the tournament, all the way up to the MLS Cup final. Moving on to listener mailbag, Kartik, and the first one up is a great question from Bill Reese. He says, when considering bids for television rights, do leagues and governing bodies simply choose the highest bid, or will they consider the entire proposal from the broadcasting company? Would a league take a slightly less expensive bid if it meant that their league had more exposure on a bigger network, etc.? Do you want to take this one, Kartik?
Yeah, I believe that's actually happened with the Premier League in this country, specifically this rights cycle, the 6 years they went with NBC for, when there was actually a joint bid that we believe was higher from Fox and ESPN. They used a loophole. Actually, I think they used they created a loophole after the fact that they don't want joint bids, and they knocked out ESPN Fox. But I think the reality was the Premier League was very happy with the exposure they'd gotten in this country from ESPN, from NBC. They wanted to continue that relationship. They also made the exception, taking it from 3 years to 6 years. The rest of their contracts all over the globe are 3-year deals. So NBC essentially got two rights cycles out of it. This is, however, Bill, I think mostly an exception. We've seen repeatedly leagues do kind of strange things in terms of taking high bids that give them less exposure. And I think this is the conversation we've had about La Liga recently, right?
Yeah.
They took more money for less exposure. The Bundesliga, more money now for less exposure on ESPN+. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. But again, this past weekend, if I wasn't happy with the Premier League, I'm increasingly not enamored with a lot of the play in the Premier League. I can just flip the channel. Next year, I won't be able to do that to watch a Bundesliga match. So I think more often than not, they do take the best money solution. But the Premier League stands as a major exception this past right cycle. And I think it's really worked out well for them.
Yeah, and actually an additional example of this too, Kartik, is that Major League Soccer, when it was on NBC Sports, and they did a good job. I mean, the ratings weren't huge at the time, but they did some whip-around shows. They definitely showed a lot of commitment to broadcasting Major League Soccer. But when the bids came up in terms of the next rights cycle, and NBC Sports was interested in continuing the relationship with broadcasting Major League Soccer, according to one of my sources, Major League Soccer came in and said, okay, if you want Major League Soccer to broadcast it, we're going to be actually increasing the actual what we're expecting for the rights to Major League Soccer. So much so that NBC looked at the numbers they were getting for the coverage that they were getting and said, okay, well, that's not going to work because we're not going to be able to make the money or break even on broadcasting this league. So, and actually NBC Sports went ahead and walked away from the negotiations, and Major League Soccer then said, okay, we'll do a deal with ESPN and Fox and Univision, and that became the 5-year or 7-year deal, whatever it was. And that's something that, too, in hindsight, I think in many ways, if NBC Sports and Major League Soccer was able to come to an agreement where Major League Soccer said, you know what, TV money is important, but reach and coverage are more important. So let's go ahead and do a deal. Okay, yes, we're expecting more money, but okay, we'll give you an opportunity to continue at the same rate that you were going at before in terms of how much you were paying for Major League Soccer, because we believe in you. We believe that you're a partner that can help us, maybe piggybacking with a Premier League coverage and having kind of a double header between. I mean, maybe it's a 4:30 Eastern time NBC Major League Soccer game, on a 2:30 game at right after the Premier League on a Saturday or something like that. And that's an example of a league looking at this and saying, okay, we're just going for the highest bids, and that's all we're going for. We're not looking for a partner that's going to help us with the big proposal that's going to help us get better reach or better coverage of our games and our league. Moving on, Tim Keane says, regarding Premier League Mornings, the show on NBCSN, I just suffered through the show. Unfortunately, I can't watch hours of talk about Manchester United just going over the same points again and again and again. It's just boring. They might have tried to have got some explanation for the league or other experts about VAR. Two unbelievable decisions, the Burnley goal disallowed, clear and obvious. The Watford penalty denied, clear and obvious. And on that Sunday morning when I was watching some of the pre-game coverage for Man United against Liverpool, I thought the same thing, Tim. I thought it was really just not a lot of value, just a lot of talk, but nothing where I was like, oh, that's a good point, or that's something I didn't know. It just seemed to be disappointing for NBC in regards to that particular morning when I watched it. I haven't watched as much Premier League mornings as I have done in previous seasons, but I was disappointed, especially leading up to a big game.
NBC has shifted from Pulisic mode to big club mode, which is equally annoying. I mean, they are always talking, particularly about Manchester United and Arsenal, but also about the other top four clubs. But they like, oh, and Tottenham, sorry. It's Spurs, Arsenal, and Manchester United. So I think the thing NBC's pregame and expanded pregame show now, Premier League mornings on Sunday mornings are 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Prior to the early kickoff. Actually, this week there was no early kickoff, but it was still 2 hours prior to Liverpool, Manchester United, Liverpool match was at Old Trafford. They talk endlessly about controversies at big clubs. So pretty soon there'll be a controversy at Manchester City also, because I think there's a good chance Pep doesn't make it through the season just because of the kind of person he is, mm-hmm. And the fact that Manchester City probably won't win any trophies this year. So that might be another talking point for them when it comes around. But right now, it's all about Pochettino, dressing room intrigue at Spurs, what's going on at Manchester United. Is such and such a Manchester United level player? What's Ed Woodward doing? Has Unai Emery improved Arsenal? These are the talking points. So mm-hmm. It's very weird, Chris, because I think for six seasons, NBC covered the league in a way where, yeah, there was probably more talk about Liverpool and Manchester United and Arsenal than other clubs. But there was, you got enough coverage of a Watford, you got enough coverage of a Burnley, you got enough coverage of the Middlesbroughs when they were in the league, and the Cardiffs and the Swansea. Obviously, you have a soft spot for Swansea. Robbie Musto in particular was really well informed about the rest of the clubs in the league, and even the clubs coming up from the Championship. Now it seems they've taken a very tactical shift to based on probably market research as to who the most popular teams are in the U.S. and the ratings they get for certain clubs, and they're talking about those clubs endlessly, if particularly if there's some controversy there. So, mm-hmm. I agree with Tim's observation. I've noticed it also. I've watched less of NBC studio shows this season for that reason.
And it's a great opportunity, too. I mean, you have a Sunday morning, you have more time to actually do something different. Maybe bring somebody new that's not usually, that's not one of the two Robbies or Kyle. and bring somebody in with a different idea. And not to do comedy, not to do Men in Blazers or something stupid like that, but to do something where, you know, it's different. It's going to shake things up. Bring somebody in that's actually going to add to, enhance the coverage that they have. Now, this weekend, of course, they've got the Fan Fest in Austin, Texas. So that'll take up the entire weekend. But hopefully in the near future, they'll mix things up and try something different. Well, even from this past Sunday, they did try something different with the Boot Room. But it's with the same individuals. It's Kyle and Robbie talking about, Manchester United again. So, all right, let's move on to MKE Toffees. And he says, a suggestion from the podcast on history/tactics is listening to BBC Five's Up All Night. It's a call-in show from around the world, and dialogue is just wonderful. The stories analysis are top-notch. You can download it as a weekly podcast. And you can also listen to it live, too. I think it's on Friday nights, but that's highly recommended. Good recommendation there, MKE Toffees.
I agree, and I just want to mention, I assume because it's MKE Toffees, it's a Newcastle supporter from Milwaukee. By the way, I was born in Milwaukee. I lived the first, almost the first 5 years of my life there before moving to Florida. Most people don't know that.
I didn't know that. I've known you for years. Yeah. I did not know that.
That is my hometown, technically.
Wow. All right. Never been to Milwaukee. Not that there's anything wrong with Milwaukee, but never been there. Monty Reed says, during the international break, I watched a U23 Mexico against Argentina game on TUDN Extra, and the broadcast was in English. I was surprised that it was in English until I listened to the podcast, and you all mentioned that TUDN was targeting younger Hispanics who may or may not know Spanish. I also noticed that a lot of the Liga MX broadcasts are offered in English also on TUDN Extra. As far as websites for tactics, my favorite is YouTube videos by Tifo Football. And Tifo Football had a good one that we talked about, I think, a few months ago, which was an interview with Peter Drury. Yeah, TUDN Extra, when they have rights to English broadcasts, so they have rights, the English language rights to a lot of the Liga MX clubs from Mexico, and oftentimes they will have English language broadcasts of those teams. And our friend Juan Arango, who both Kartik and I have known for many years, and he's been on this podcast before and worked with us when I did La Liga Talk, he's doing a lot of those broadcasts too, both doing Spanish and English too. So that's good to see that they're expanding their reach there and their audience. Herb says, I really enjoyed the commentary on ESPN2 compared to the Go Canada Go analysis from onesoccer.ca from Canada's side. I would say what many analysts are missing is that Canada has been steadily improving. On paper, this is probably the best squad we have had since the 2000 Gold Cup win. Massive thank you for giving credit to Canada. I remember having a conversation with a USA fan and told him that Canada could possibly win that game. That fan laughed at me. I told him that Canada is playing the US at a perfect time, given the TNT debacle, and the US is playing Canada at a terrible time. Needless to say, my prediction was correct, although I was expecting Canada to steal a win and play more conservatively. However, they outplayed the US to the point where I was simply embarrassed for the USA. I couldn't be more proud of the progress Canadian soccer has made. We have always had a strong talent pool, but we're unable to click it together. And he says, Allez les Rouges.
I agree. I do want to say I think in the 2007 Gold Cup, Canada had a really good team. D-Row at the heart of that team. Younger Julian De Guzman. Stal Terry was kind of in the prime of his career then. Rob Friend and Tiba Hutchinson were younger. And they had they should have beaten the U.S. in the semifinal. And then the U.S. beat Mexico in the final. Who knows what would have happened in the final, considering it was in Chicago. It would have been a big pro-Mexico crowd. But I thought that was when Canada was really on the cusp of breaking through again. They should have won that match. There was a bad call that cost them, and then the U.S. ended up winning the Gold Cup. Now, U.S. fans obviously never remember this because they never remember the bad calls that go in their favor. They just complain about CONCACAF referees when it doesn't favor them. And then Canada, that cycle, was in a really tough qualifying group, sub-hex group with Mexico, Jamaica, and Honduras, and they finished last in that group. And the top three were, I think, within 1 or 2 points of one another. So they were also, maybe if they'd gotten in another qualifying group, might have made the hex. So I would say maybe it is the strongest Canada team since 2000, but I think that 2007, circa 2007, 2008 team was really good also and just got unlucky.
Next up is Martin Mulcahy, and Martin says, on Thursday's pod last week, you wondered if the German third division game of the week on YouTube was a legal stream. Yes, it is, and the DFB puts out a link to it weekly on their Facebook page. Thanks, Martin, for the info there. Last but not least, Jack says, and actually, Kartik, this is a $1 million question for you. Jack says, why do most owners join Major League Soccer? It hasn't turned a profit, no one watches it on TV, and several soccer fans believe the league stands against many of the sport's principles. Is Don Garber a really good salesperson, or am I missing something?
I actually asked this very same question, but about USL, and I ask it every day. Why now, especially with our friend Nipun Chopra reporting that USL's admission fee for a franchise in that league has gone up to $10 million? There's virtually no way to get a return on your investment in USL. Now in MLS, it's a little different because you get a piece of Soccer United marketing, which does generate profits, and we see in some markets MLS attendances and merchandise sales are really high. Atlanta, namely. I see Atlanta United shirts all over the place in South Florida, even, Chris. I mean, it's just they've become kind of a national club. I still think it's not a great investment, and you're better off investing in a club abroad. But I can see why some owners do invest in MLS. I don't know why owners invest in USL, honestly, unless it's just a vanity project. Or they're hoping they'll get selected for MLS because they're in USL. That might be the
exactly
other reason.
Yeah, it's the latter. But going back to Jack's statement that Major League Soccer has not turned a profit, that's the narrative that Major League Soccer wants us to believe. They're a private company, so we don't even see the numbers in terms of how much money is actually being generated. But from all of the expansion fees that they've gotten from all these different teams, and this week announcing Sacramento, there's millions and millions, hundreds of millions coming in from each of these different teams coming into the league. And each of these teams is a franchise. It's essentially a McDonald's. It's a franchise that has the rights then to go ahead and play. I mean, Inter Miami's going to be playing here next year in Florida, has the rights in that market in South Florida within 100 miles, the exclusive rights to go ahead and have a Major League Soccer franchise. And these owners are definitely making tons of money. But looking at you can't look at the books, but the way that Major League Soccer frames it is that times are tough. Yeah, I mean, it's yes, we have some sponsors and some TV deals, but we also have a lot of costs. And I don't believe for a second that this league has not turned a profit. I mean, the way that they've arranged the books in terms of they're making tons of money.
And it's because of their collective bargaining agreement, obviously, which is up this year, by the way. So
right.
After MLS Cup, we'll go into the frenzy about the CBA. And see what happens with that, and if the players
which is the narrative, they generally never do. The narrative is we're poor, we're breaking even. You mean times are tough, and yes, we don't have a lot of money. The reality is that they should be and could be actually paying these players a lot more money and giving them more. You mean rather than having them fly on just regular flights. You mean having have charter flights or have opportunities to actually give these players more. Benefits to be able to actually as professional sports athletes. Anyway, good question, Jack. But there's a reason that he's a good salesperson. That's the end of the story there. All right, so we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We'd love to hear from you in terms of your feedback, questions, about anything or observations in regards to media coverage of the beautiful game. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. Hey, Kartik, heading into a big weekend of soccer from around the world, including the NWSL final on Sunday, and also the Welsh Derby on Sunday morning between Swansea and Cardiff, which is going to be on ESPN Plus at 7 a.m. kickoff time, Eastern time, 4 a.m. Pacific time, which I'll be watching wherever I am. But what should they do?
Enjoy your football.